Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, David Murphy, from the National Black Unity News. We're coming to you today with a live podcast featuring Brother Deacon from the Kuamba Report. He's going to talk about some of the things that we could possibly do, no matter who wins this election, because we need to take care of ourselves. You know, it's good, you know, to rely on government, but we already know this. If you don't know, is that nobody's coming to save us but us. So we might well put some things in action, and we're going to talk about some of them things this evening. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, before we get into our discussion, I would like to bring on my partner, co-host, Mr. Satawi Jahi, who always share a powerful reading. So, Brother Satawi, you ready, sir?
Yes, sir.
You got it.
All right, thank you, David. And for everybody else that's on this podcast for this evening, thank you, Bill, for joining the podcast, and Vernon, and also...
This meeting is being recorded.
And also Ms. Kathleen Murphy. And I just want to thank y'all. You know, it's important that we make sure that we, one, stay healthy, what we got to do. We're living in some scary times, and let me dive into our reading for the night before I get sidetracked and digress. Okay. As you know, each and every time we come on this, open this podcast, we do a reading from Daily Motivations for African American Success, written by Mr. Dennis Kimbrough, who also is the author of Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice. November 2nd, what do you bring to the table? Fitness grow best in the soul of service. Ruth D. Love, educator. Reading for the day. What do you bring to the table? Do you add value to the lives of others? Do you bring peace, understanding, or knowledge? Perhaps you think you can continue to take while providing nothing in return. After all, doesn't everyone do it? It doesn't hurt. You're wrong. It does hurt. The following story proves my point. An African chief invited the men of his village to a great feast. All the food will be provided, he announced, but each of you must bring a jug of wine. Ali wanted to attend the feast, but had no wine to give. His wife suggested, "You could go buy a jug of wine. It's not too expensive." How foolish, Ali cried, to spend money when there is a way to go free. Rather than wine, I will carry water in my jug. No one will notice. It won't hurt to add one jug of water to the great pot of wine. On the day of the feast, his guests gathered in the chief's home. As each man entered the tribal grounds, he poured his jug of wine into a large earthen pot. Ali carefully added the contents of his container, greeted the chief, and joined the others. When all of the guests had arrived, the chief commanded the servants to fill everyone's glass. The chief blessed the feast. His guests raised their glasses and drank. Suddenly a cry of disbelief arose from the crowd. What they tasted was not wine, but water. Each guest had decided that his jug of water would not spoil the pot of wine. It's certain when we take out more than we give, when we speak by without giving our best, it hurts us all. Today and every day, my motto is giving more than is expected is always expected. That's a powerful reading for this evening. You know, people thought that they could, you know, what happened was each one of the guests decided they would bring water as opposed to wine. because I guess they couldn't, you know, get any wine, or they wanted too cheap to spend any money to buy a jug of wine. And so in turn, all of the guests brought water, and when people wanted to drink, you know, they were expecting maybe some, possibly some watered down wine, but it was pure water. So the moral from that story is, you know, make sure that you give and be a cheerful giver, and that you bring more to the table than you are expected to give. And, you know, that leads us into, you know, tonight's discussion around, hey, what you going to do? Are you going to vote, not vote? Well, you know, to me, that's a backward question. But, I mean, there's a lot of people that's, you know, that's contemplating that decision as to whether they're going to vote or not vote. And, you know, we're going to get a perspective from that from our guest tonight, Brother Cliff from the Coomba Report, as he's going to share some information about, regardless of who wins this election, what we need to do about what we need to do for ourselves. And so I'm going to turn this back over to Mr. David Murphy, and I'm so happy and thankful for this day, and just want everybody out there to be blessed, stay healthy, and as our forefathers used to say, whatever's going to happen, this too shall pass. Amen.
Amen. Hey, Brother Satavi, thank you for the reading and your remarks about your reading. You know, it is blessed. You know, a lot of people don't really understand when they say it's more blessed to give than to receive, because there's principles in place. And just like when you plant a seed, you get a, you know, get a harvest, you get a yield from it. That one seed can turn into a forest. And when you bless a person, the blessings come back manyfold. And so, you know, I can go on and on about the benefits of giving. But there's one thing about man. When he share, when he gives, especially when he gives from his heart, and usually don't look for really nothing in return, because he wants to see true change, things that take place. And some things we can change, some things we cannot. But when everybody brings something to the table, you know, everybody can feast upon it. Nobody go hungry. And so tonight's discussion is going to be about, you know, of course, voting, to vote or not to vote. But the most important thing, no matter who's in office, local, national, is this. We, I'm talking about black people right now, melanated people, indigenous people, whatever you call your original people, is this. In my lifetime, I've been through a multitude of elections, and a lot of things has changed. But I do know one thing. For real change to take place for us as the people, we're going to have to do it ourselves. We cannot rely or even wait on somebody to come to help us or change our situations. And besides, God has already blessed us. See, God already gave us, like Brother Satavi just said, he already had blessings and gave us everything we need to sustain ourselves, to support ourselves, to look out for one another, if we all shared and gave. And so tonight, I met this brother some time ago. He's like my partner, Bill. You know, their reputation preceded them. Before I even met, laid eyes on these guys, I knew of them because they had literature all over the place about who they are and what they were doing. And Brother Cliff was one of them brothers. I just met him several years ago in person, but I knew of him for a long time. And when I had the opportunity to meet him, sit down with him, and he shared a lot of information. This brother is a wealth of knowledge, wisdom, experience, not only local, but nationally and internationally. This brother, to me, I think he's a genius, you know, because I understand. You know, they don't say iron sharpens iron. See, when a person get into their craft, into their mission, into their calling, they dig so deep, just like a musician. You know, he just don't double them. You know, they start from childhood, some of them. You know, they practice thing every day. And Brother Cliff seems to be one of them type brothers. And it's not about making a lot of money. He's not all about all of that kind of stuff. Of course, we all can use that. But Brother Cliff is about helping us as a people, trying to, you know, create unity amongst ourselves. Brother Cliff also, he sees the problem like many of us. Some of us don't even see it, how we harm ourselves by some of the little things that separate us that is the greater things that can unite us. And getting back to Brother Cliff, see, he's one of them brothers, man, that can share with you. If you sit down and talk, he would share with you a wealth of information. And some of the players who's doing this, locals and throughout the diaspora, he's well noted on all of that. And plus, the brother's multi-talented. He's a DJ. Matter of fact, he even DJed my last birthday party. Thank you, Brother Cliff. Man, it was outstanding. And but yet, this brother he introduced me to the Maryland Council of Elders. He's the one that invited me into it. And I'd be remiss if I don't mention this today. Today, I watched from afar a funeral service from one of our members.
Yep.
Sister Lynn Washington, mother, queen, soldier, general. I mean, this lady, just like Cliff, is putting in work for a marketer. She's an educator. I mean, this lady, I was truly impressed with her. And they laid, you know, her to rest today. And I watched the entire funeral from the computer. And the elders showed up, and you know they really participated in the services, and I know sister would be well pleased, you know, because they honored her properly, and may she rest in peace and rest in power, and Brother Cliff was the one who instituted Maryland Council of Elders, and he's been involved with quite a few different organizations. But thank you for that too, because I met wonderful people who's out there who have paid their dues and still working in the vineyard. And so, you know, it makes you know feel, you know, because I'm out there working every day too, and it just makes you feel so much better when you know you have comrades out there on the battlefield with you. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce you to your brother D. Cliff from the Coomba Report. And Brother Cliff has a wealth of information that he's going to share. And the first thing I'm going to ask him is this. Why do you spend so much of your valuable time researching, connecting dots, pulling people together, and it's a difficult job. I've seen him in action. I think he had to deal with so many different, you know, people with so many different concepts. But yet he endures all of that and press forward. And so why do you do all them things, sir?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for that extremely complimentary introduction. I think over the next several minutes ago, we're going to find out just how smart I am, depending on how well I'm able to actually get this PowerPoint up on the screen and how well I'm able to get through my points and make them clear. As far as if you're talking about the why, I guess after a while it just comes down to a question where sooner or later I would think that most people just kind of get tired of being in a position where all they can do is complain about a thing and never actually take action, never actually do anything about it. There are a lot of people who are out there now who are pulling their hair out over tomorrow, over Election Day. And there are some people who are acting like if a certain person gets another 4 years at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, they're going to jump out of a window. And it seems to me that oftentimes what we do is we too often put our fate in other people's hands. And really what we need to be doing, no matter who's in the White House, is we need to be truly organizing among ourselves. I remember when George W. Bush was about to become president of the United States, And a number of friends of mine said, well, go on ahead and elect George W. Bush president. Give us our worst fear. It will force us to come together and organize as a people. So fate, the creator, whoever, obliged and gave us what then was our worst fear, because we were all certain that if George W. Bush became president, that essentially jaywalking was going to draw the death penalty and there were going to be wars all up and down the street. Now, jaywalking didn't become a capital offense, but there were quite a few wars that the United States got pulled into unnecessarily and immorally during George W. Bush's 8 years in the White House. But contrary to what some of those same people who were saying, give us a worst fear, it'll make us come together and organize, what they actually ended up doing, many of them ended up running and hiding and crawling under their beds. So it's one thing to say, well, go ahead, put our enemy in place. It'll shake us up. It'll make us come together as a people. I saw that happen, and I saw us not come together as a people. I even saw some of us turn on each other as a result. And quite frankly, I've seen some of the same thing over the last 4 years with Donald Trump in the White House. So on the one hand, putting our enemy doesn't force us to organize. Then they say, well, put in our friend. Everything will be all wonderful and fine and dandy. Well, that doesn't really work so well either. As far as I'm concerned, Barack Obama was, as presidents go, was among the best presidents the United States has had. And yet, still, under the Obama administration, you had an increase in prosecution of whistleblowers. You had an increase in drone attacks around the world. And you had the bombing of Libya and the killing of their president, Muammar Gaddafi, a man who at one time had been a backer of quote unquote radical Islamic terror. But by this time, by the time of the attack on Libya, had actually apologized for his time as a radical Islamic terror supporter, had made amends to a lot of the people who had suffered because of his political stand at that time, and was also helping the United States keep a lid on radical Islamic terror in North Africa. As a result of the killing of Gaddafi, what did we get? We got essentially the killing or the end of the single largest benefactor of the African Union, which meant at that point the African Union had no funding, no real funding. That cost me $3,000 when I had to fly over to Lusaka, Zambia on my own dime to attend in 2016 to attend a meeting that was canceled while my plane was in the air. That was a lot of fun, long and bloody tale. But it also meant that the weapons that Gaddafi was keeping a lid on, the weapons that were part of Libya's military arsenal, suddenly hit the wind. Where did they wind up? They wound up in the hands of ISIL in Syria and Boko Haram in northern Nigeria. So even the person who we consider to be the greatest president for some of us ever, someone who is currently on the campaign trail for Joe Biden right now and is stirring up a lot of our emotions and making us feel nostalgic for the good old days. We had a brother as president of the United States. Even his administration did some things that, looked at from a Pan-African perspective, were grievous, at least mistakes, if not misdeeds of policy. So to assume that our vote is the only thing that we have to contribute to our uplift as a people is a fallacy. Just our vote isn't going to do it. We've got to do a lot more than just go to the polls every 4 years, push a lever, and hope that magically everything will turn out fine. That's the same kind of magical thinking that Donald Trump has been showing for the last several months when he said, oh, pretty soon the coronavirus will disappear. It'll be gone. It'll go down to zero. He's not doing anything to make it go down to zero. As a matter of fact, he's being counterproductive about it. But he's saying that it's going to go down. And apparently that's the same kind of thinking that we often use in the political arena. We'll put someone in office for a four-year term, sit back, wait for them to do whatever they do, and then either cry and whine or get ready to jump up and mobilize to either get them out or to replace them with someone else. But we got to do things ourselves, for our own people, if we want our own interests to be advanced, if we want our own people to be uplifted, and if we want Africa and African people to finally see freedom, liberation, and prosperity. Not sure if I completely answered your question, but basically it was just it's just a desire to do whatever it is that I feel that I can do in terms of better informing myself, and anyone who wants to listen, they can listen and learn what I can from other people, like all of the wonderful activists and business people and other individuals that you have on this call. Try to absorb what I can and try to pass it on.
Okay, Brother Cliff. Now, since we have you, you are the guest this evening, and I appreciate you taking time to be with us. You know, I've been in several town hall meetings that you hosted, and you had this unique idea, which to me is unique because it kind of ties everybody in. And I would love for you to elaborate on that. I think you may have a PowerPoint and everything set up for that. Are you prepared to do something?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm gonna go on faith that if I click this wonderful little share screen button down here, that's gonna do something. Let's see. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, nope. Screen sharing is not on. Okay. What I might just do is I might look at the slideshow myself and then use that to kind of guide me, because that's usually what I do is normally, and let me see what, yeah, it just says host disabled participants. Okay. So I can't do the screen sharing right now. So
I can give you permission to, you know,
okay.
Let me try that first then.
All right.
Where are you? Okay.
I see. I'm not as smart as you think I am. If I was a real genius, I'd have been able to hack this Zoom feed and take it over.
Okay. Well, you'll see a thing on your screen to say, "Do you want to make Cliff?" And then all you got to do is hit yes.
Okay. Should I click the share screen button to see that again, or what?
Yes. After you hit yes.
Okay. Oh, it's still saying it's disabled. So.
Try it one more time, sir.
All right.
In the meantime, while we try to get this technical thing set up, let me try one more time. I think it's not on your end because I told you we got bombed one time, so I kind of disabled that.
Oh, yeah.
So that hackers couldn't come in and do their thing on us, because that's how they do it through the screen share.
Right.
So I disable that. So just take it from where you are, you know, because
if you make him co-host, he should be able to share a screen.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to do before. You know, let me try it one more time.
All right, now it looks like there's something up now.
It say make you a host right now. All you got to do is hit yes.
Well, right now it just says select the window that you want to share. So it looks like it's going to let me do something.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right, so here it. Okay. All right, now
there you go.
Is it up?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I can't exactly tell from here, but okay, I'm just going to go on ahead and wait a minute. Let me start from here. Let me see what happens if I click like so. Okay, looks like we may be in business. Okay, all right. That's my little Tambico screen, and usually when we have our town halls, we usually start off with a libation or a Tambico, and so I usually put that screen up there just to kind of like signify it, just to get things going. In place of a traditional Tambico for today, though, I think what I'd really want to do is just pay a little personal homage to Mama Maisha.
Sir.
These are, assuming everyone can see this, these are a number of photos that were taken from a number of events that Mama Maisha was in attendance for. The upper left and upper right corners are from the 2018 National Summit of one of the organizations I belong to, the Sixth Region Diaspora Caucus. The bottom left photo is from African Liberation Day, I believe, in 2019. And Mama Maisha is there on the far left with a number of members of the Maryland Council of Elders, Baba Nati from Everyone's Place, Sister Ujima from Woman, Baba Shambe from Arch Social Club, and a number of other activists who were in attendance at that particular meeting. Lower right and middle left is from a June 23rd event from a couple of years ago that Sister Kim Poole of the Teaching Artists Institute put on in Washington, D.C. And so I wanted to at least spend a little bit of time just offering up a little bit of honor and praise to Mama Maisha. I had met her in 2007 when we first started the SRDC organization, and I'll explain that real briefly in a minute. Here in Maryland, she was the first elected representative from the state of Maryland in SRDC. And then after that, there were a number of other things that she kind of had to take care of. She was a very busy woman dealing with the organization. She was involved with AAPRP, All African Women's Revolutionary Union. And she was also an instructor, a teacher in the Baltimore City schools. She was imparting a knowledge of self and a pride in African heritage in the children that she taught there. And then in 2017, when at the fifth of five town halls we held that year, the Maryland Council of Elders was formally created through nomination and voting process by the people who were gathered at that event. And as a result, Mama Maisha was voted on to the Maryland Council of Elders, as was Elder David Murphy, as were Baba Rafiki Morris, Mama Abena Dishro, Mama Victory Swift, Reverend Mother Marcia Bauya Barron, Baba Ishaka Ra Hannibal L., Dr. Ken Morgan, I'm going to forget someone, Baba Kenyatta Howard, and of course, I'm missing, there were like eight or nine people who were on the
Reverend Yah too.
Yes, Baba Yaya Shabazz is also on the Maryland Council of Elders. And so at that time, she became a strong voice on the Maryland Council of Elders and actually became a co-chair along with Baba Rafiki for the council. And among the other things that she has accomplished over the last year, even this past summer, she instituted a virtual summer camp that was held between here in Maryland and in Monrovia, Liberia. There were around 40 middle school to high school age students in Monrovia, Liberia, who participated along with somewhere between, I think, 8 and 12 students here in the Maryland area in this virtual summer camp. And she would get up early in the morning every day and personally communicate, talk with the students in Liberia, because, of course, their clock is several hours ahead of ours. And she would arrange these sessions in subjects from yoga to linguistics to oral history to environment to engineering to project management to yoga and Zumba. So there were a wide range of courses that were being offered at this summer camp. And she was one of the instructors, and she was the primary organizer, along with Madam Louise Siaway, who is the founder and president of a Liberian organization called SEWA. And so that was the major accomplishment that she had over this past summer. And there were plans to do it again next summer and even talk about possibly holding similar virtual learning efforts, projects throughout the year at different times if we could organize them. She also was gathering together project managers, engineers, designers, library scientists, et cetera, for the purpose of planning the construction of what will be the first ever public library in Liberia. Liberia has had no public library throughout its history. And as a matter of fact, this particular library, when it is completed, will serve Liberia, Cote d'Ivoire, Guinea-Bissau, and Sierra Leone. So it'll actually serve all four of those countries in that region. And we are in the process of securing a 2-acre plot of land in Monrovia where the library will be constructed. A team would have gone to Liberia already to actually personally survey the site, which arrangements have been made for, except that the coronavirus has kind of thrown travel plans for a loop. So we weren't able to do that. But aside from her work with AAPRP, AAWRU, SRDC, Maryland Council of Elders, she was spearheading both of these projects. And part of, I think, our honoring of her legacy will be determined by how well we are able to carry that mighty work that she had started and launched forward. So this is one of those instances where the torch has now been passed. We got to make sure that we carry it with us. And my computer's making funny noises. Okay. My name again is, well, the name I go by is Cliff Kuumba. That's because of the newsletter I wrote back in 1997 to 2011. I wrote a newsletter and I called it Kuumba Report. And so my nom de plume became Cliff Kuumba. Everyone just calls me Brother Cliff. In 2011, I ran out of money to do Kuumba Report. Ran my credit cards up too much and ran out of cash. And since I didn't want to completely send us to the poorhouse, I had to shut down the newsletter. But a few years after I shut down the newsletter, I started a website. And so now a little more than half of the issues of Kuumba Report and then whatever other crazy notions come to my head in the last several years go up on this website. And the website is KuumbaReport.com. I'm also the Maryland State Facilitator of the Sixth Region Diaspora Caucus, or SRDC. And I'm also, as of about earlier this year, I'm also the North American Region Deputy Coordinator of the Pan-African Federalist Movement, or PAFM. And, okay. Now, I guess normally when people make presentations to groups, usually what they're doing is they're promoting something. Some might say that they're selling something. And usually in promoting or selling that particular thing, there are a number of promises that are made to the people who are listening. It's going to bring you prosperity. It's going to bring you freedom. And it's going to make your life better. And then there'll usually be some kind of an investment that you have to make in order to obtain those rewards, money, time, effort, whatever. Did somebody want to chime in with something? Okay.
You are muted. At any rate, you can mute or unmute yourself
by pressing
star 6.
I guess in a sense you could say that I'm here to sell something too. Only it's a different kind of a thing. It's not something that will make us rich, although it's something that can make our people rich. It's something that can bring prosperity to African people here and around the world if we are conscientious about it. It can bring freedom to us, especially those of us who are living under oppression, but it will require a degree of an investment. It will require an investment of time. It will require an investment in effort, sweat, and whatever intellect that we have to bring to it. So it's a different kind of a sell job, but hopefully it's a sell job that will not be as hard as some of the other sell jobs that I have been subjected to, because I've gotten into some of those other business ventures, and some of them worked okay and some of them didn't. But what we want to sell is essentially a means of bringing our people together and organizing our communities. We love to talk about how Black people must come together, how unity is important and required if we're going to free ourselves. And yet you look at all the different organizations that even exist here in the Baltimore area where we live, most of us live at least, and we notice that most of them are going on their own road. You don't really see too many of them. You see some of them, but you don't see enough of them actually coming together. And that always kind of made me scratch my head. Again, this is another one of those things of okay, it's one thing to talk about the situation. It's another thing to do it. why is it that there are so many organizations that insist that we must unify, and yet you don't see them working together? In some cases, you can't even get them to sit in the same room with each other, sit down and talk about cooperative strategies. So to me, that has never made sense, because all of the organizations more or less do one of three things. And those three things are what the two organizations I'm involved with are doing: either local self-help through town halls or local coordinating committees, or local and national activism, mobilizing your resources, or some kind of national or international advocacy, taking your voice to the world stage. So toward that end, that's what the two organizations I've been affiliated are doing. SRDC, its mission, and this is not the actual mission statement, because the actual mission statement was written by a professor, which means it's a very long paragraph. It's a single sentence that lasts like, you know, forever and ever. So I decided to break that down a little bit. But the idea of SRDC has always been to take the voice of the grassroots Pan-African diaspora to the world stage. And the idea is to, first of all, work with our local communities, build a Pan-African agenda, ask the people what it is that they feel we need to do to free ourselves. What are the issues we struggle with? What are the things we have to do? Then use that Pan-African agenda to mobilize ourselves, put political pressure on elected officials, increase the degree to which organizations work together, and then put pressure on organizations like the United Nations or the African Union. The Pan-African Federalist Movement's primary goal, though, is a little bit different, and that is to build what they call the United African States, which is a little bit different from the African Union. The African Union is essentially an organization where the 54, I guess now 55, because they might have brought Western Sahara in, heads of states of all of these African countries in the continent basically get together and work out whatever strategies that they want to work out to supposedly attempt to lift up the continent. But too often self-interest gets involved, and as a result, the African Union's own processes get mired in the muck of bureaucracy. So it has sometimes become dysfunctional and sometimes difficult for my organization, SRDC, to actually work with. So what the Pan-African Federalist Movement is talking about is not organizing at the head of state level, but organizing at the grassroots level. So they have created on-the-ground grassroots organizations in many of the African countries. They've also done it here in the United States and Canada and in the Caribbean and in South America. So they're doing something similar to what SRDC is doing, but their specific objective is to form this new United African States, which will unify the 55 countries in Africa, plus the black countries in the Caribbean and large African descendant populations in other countries like Brazil, the United States, and certain places in Europe. So they're kind of parallel missions. And since I'm in both organizations, I'm kind of working to try to bring these two organizations together so that they can work officially as a kind of a cohesive group. I'm not going to get too much into this particular slide. I can talk about that later on if there's any appetite for it. And I'm not going to talk too much about this one either, because it's going to take up a lot of time to do that. But basically, the three world stage organizations that I see as far as ways to get our voice out, because if we keep on going to Uncle Sam, that's what Malcolm X said we need to stop doing. He said we need to stop going from the wolf to the fox. To some degree, he might have even implied that voting is going from the wolf to the fox. I don't advocate against voting, because I think if you have some kind of influence over who runs the United States, even if you don't put your friend in the White House, you can have some influence on who your opponent's going to be. You can decide who your enemy is going to be. You can decide whether you'd rather fight Biden or fight Trump. I'd rather fight Biden. So I've already voted. But the idea is not that Biden's going to be my friend. The idea is that Biden might be an easier opponent to deal with than Trump. So if we go to the world stage, you're talking about the African Union, possibly. You're talking about the United Nations, which deals with nations around the world, but both of those organizations are still geared toward what the heads of states of those countries do, and they have certain limitations on how well we can be represented in them, at least at the moment. And they both have bureaucracy, and they both have politics, and they both have corruption. The third one is the other organization, the Pan-African Federalist Movement. We just had our North American Pan-African Federalist Congress or convention. And that was from October 15th through 19th. It was done on Zoom. And basically that was the United States and Canada. And there were some visitors who came from other parts of the world who participated as well. And then sometimes there are independent organizations that will work together. Okay. I'm just going to go straight through. Okay. What Elder David Murphy is talking about is the whole concept of a cooperative coalition, and that's where this spokes of the wheel graphic vision, whatever, comes in. And this thing is automatically moving on me, so okay. But basically, a cooperative coalition comes from the word cooperative, and we're working together. We're sharing work, we're sharing the profits, sharing the benefits. And in coalition, basically just being an alliance. So it's different from what you see there on the right. Most organizations are done like a hierarchical type organization. That's what we're used to seeing when we think of an organizational chart. But instead of that, what we're talking about is something a little bit more like this, where there's no one who is above anyone else. Everybody really has an equal position or an equal stake in what it is we're doing. And I was at a retreat in 2011 in North Carolina at a retreat center. And the thing that kind of made me start thinking this way was the fact that all the different organizations that were there were sitting at tables that were arrayed in a circle. And there were a few things that I noticed about it. First of all, no one seemed to be bigger than anyone else in that circle. And everybody could look across the circle and see everyone else. And I guess the metaphor for that is no hidden agendas. So if I wanted to, I want to go back to that. This is a graphic of a lot of the organizations, most of which are in this particular area. You got things from working, organizing, making a nation, to Afuna Muda, Baba Umoja. We've got the Black Running Organization. We've got African Heritage Walkathon, Our Victorious City. They're all kind of Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, PLM, all kinds of different organizations. And as I said before, too often we don't see these different organizations effectively working together. And one of the reasons why I don't see that we're moving ahead as quickly as we should is because we're not. I have kind of classified the organizations into 12, instead of that huge jumble, into 12 general types. So you got your neighborhood and Pan-African grassroots organizations. So that would be anything from the such and such and such and so neighborhood community organization up through what I often like to think of SRDC as being, getting the people on the ground together to work out what their issues are and trying to deal with those problems at the grassroots level. I consider Brother Bill Gooden to be one of the top grassroots activists in this area. And it's because, you know, he's able to reach down to where the people are. There are artist collectives like Sister Kim Poole has the Teaching Artists Institute, and she's been doing an awful lot. She's gone across the country, and she's been all over Africa already. I kind of wish I could bottle up the energy she has and just pass it around. There are Black business organizations, and some of them approach business in a Black-centered or African-centered way, and some are just business organizations that have a Black face. There are African-centered educators and researchers. Mama Maisha was one. She was a major African-centered educator. And then among the researchers, of course, you had groups like Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. science, environmental, and health practitioners. We don't have enough representation in this group, but I know they're out there. I just don't know who they are. Revolutionary Pan-Africanist organizations, from the All African People's Revolutionary Party to the Organization of All African Unity Black Panther Cadre to PLM. I consider PLM such an organization. There are mainstream spiritual, Pan-African and mainstream spiritual leaders. Brother King, I would consider to be a Pan-African spiritual leader. Baba Ademola, I would consider to be a Pan-African spiritual leader. And then you have people like Pastor Heber Brown, who you might consider to be a mainstream spiritual leader, but he seriously is invested in doing what he can to help build up the community. We've got media. We're on a Zoom call, the Media Collective, right now. And we've got the National Black Unity News. We've got LIB Radio. We've got Harambe Radio. We've got individuals who have shows like Mama Tomiko and Baba Tai, who have a show on WFBR. We've got people on WOLB, some people on WEAA. So you have individuals like that. Pro-democracy organizations, Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle also kind of falls in here because they do a lot of lobbying in Annapolis. And then other organizations that are doing get out the vote initiatives. Like I said, I don't have any issue with voting myself. Pan-African Legal Collective, I know of a few very strong lawyers, but I don't know that there's a Pan-African Legal Collective. I don't know that there's a group out there that's doing that kind of work. That's another area. Prisoner and ex-offender support organizations, and there have been a number of them over the years. Aging People in Prison, FOXO, Jericho, and then elders councils like the Maryland Council of Elders, and there are a number of senior organizations that also do a lot of serious community work. So I basically just organized them into those 12 areas, and then if you took a look at how we tend to try to bring those different, because they all have different missions, all different ideas as far as what they want to do to advance us as a people. They don't all believe in the same things. The revolutionary Pan-Africanists are, well, they're ready for revolution. And the pro-democracy organizations are often trying to work out change within the system, either by mobilizing the vote or putting political pressure on or that sort of thing. The artist groups are basically trying to heal us with culture. So they're using different ideas, different perspectives, and different tactics. And sometimes they fall into what I consider to be the trap of saying blank, 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 blank is the way. Culture is the new currency, as a means of saying culture is how we're going to do this. Or without an economic basis, what we need to have. Or if you don't vote, you shouldn't complain. And to my way of thinking, they're right and they're wrong at the same time, because it's true that we need all those things, but to say that that's all that we need is to fall into the same trap that we've been in. So as a result, you'll end up with the different organizations lining up on one side of the room, and our objective is on the other side of the room. And because they all have different missions and different ideas and different philosophies, they're not paying that much attention to each other. When you tell them, okay, we're going to go get this objective, we're going to go free our people, and just gather them together in a room and say, we're going to get together and go free our people, a lot of the times, what do? They start competing. And so, as a result, there are going to be some who are, maybe they'll be a little faster than everyone else, and they'll get to jump on them. There'll be some others, they're not quite as fast, but you know, they go around Red Robin's barn, and this one at the bottom managed to kind of sneak in. Some other people got to go all the way around, and by the time they get there, most of what they went to obtain is gone. And then there's some other people that just blocked entirely. And we often see that. I remember back in 2000, I met at a friend's house in West Baltimore, Garrison and Gwynns Falls, and it was for a meeting of what was billed as the Pan-African United Front. And there were all these committed activists who were there. And fortunately, this one meeting I didn't make it to, because at the meeting, apparently there was some issue that developed between two of the activists. And I don't know whether they were, whether they held competing philosophies or whether there was some personal thing going on. But next thing you know, these two brothers are getting ready to go at it in the middle of the floor at this house. And so as a result, what happened to that Pan-African United Front was the same thing that too often happens to Pan-African United Fronts almost right after you declare them to be Pan-African United Fronts. They dissolve and they break down because people are still competing with each other. The economists say, well, it's my mission that we should follow. And then the spiritual person says, no, you should just pray on it. Or the revolutionary says, no, no, we have to prepare for war. And the pro-democracy group saying, no, you should just go vote. What's wrong with you? And they start fighting and start arguing. And next thing you know, the whole thing breaks down, which is why I don't even call those coalitions anymore. I call them coalitions in name only, or CNOs. Because, again, to me, the entire structure is one that encourages competition, because it makes people think that I've got to get through that other person's plan, that other person's agenda. I've got to express the dominance of my agenda and make everyone follow me. The problem is we all seem to agree on one particular philosophy. Black people must come together and unify under my leadership. And because of those last three words, under my leadership, no one comes together because nobody wants to follow each other. And so that destroys the whole thing. And so you wind up with, and I hope this plays, you wind up with a situation like this. That's Walmart on Black Friday. But that, to me, that's how we start to act. When you get our organizations together and they are competing for dominance in leadership of whatever coalition it is we put together, when I see us come together and behave the way they did at that one Pan-African United Front meeting in 2000 and other short-lived efforts to establish a similar thing that have happened since then, I think back to something like that. And however anyone expects that to bring us to freedom is beyond me. But if we just conceptualize it a different way, maybe then we can start to find a way to work cooperatively. What if instead we put our objective in the middle of the room, not at one end? And instead of lining everyone up at the other end of the room, we set them up around the objective in a circle. So you just set them up in a circle, and then their missions to reach that objective are shown as straight lines. And the first thing I noticed when I looked at it that way was none of those lines cross each other. Nobody has to bump into anybody, knock somebody out of the way, gouge anybody's eyes out. You don't have to step on anybody. It doesn't even matter how fast you go, because every organization in this conceptual arrangement has a clear path to the objective. And then the other thing that I noticed about it was that when I stepped back from it and just kind of simplified it a little bit, it looked like that. And so that's where the name Spokes of the Wheel came from. The idea being that the organizations that make up the coalition are aligned along the rim. The objective is at the center, and the spokes are our missions to reach that center. And the other thing about that is that, well, as long as all that's nice and solid, the wheel will spin. And by spinning, the wheel will help us get where it is that we need to go. That's basically what the essence of the model is. This is a logo that I had worked up a few years ago for what we were going to call the Harriet Tubman City Pan-African United Front. I decided I was going to not be so grandiose about it and instead call it the Harriet Tubman City Cooperative Coalition. Because, again, it seems that whenever we call something a united front, that's when it starts to break down. And maybe by calling it a cooperative coalition, it will impress on the minds of the people who are involved with it that we have to work cooperatively and not competitively. So that's essentially what the structure of it is. I'm not sure whether I want to get into what they all represent or not, because that might actually, I might be able to fly through this. Okay. There's the Artist Collective, and this is just a list of some of the organizations that might be involved in it. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. Of course, Sister Kim Poole runs Teaching Artists Institute, and then there are a number of things in general that are involved with that. There's something that would perhaps be called the Revolutionary Action Council. So that would have groups like PLM and Women and more regional organizations like Black Left Unity Network, AAPRP, organizations like that. There's the Spiritual Group. That's a jinyame. It's a Dinkra symbol for the omnipotence of God. So Brother King runs Souls of Life Society. Pastor Heber Brown runs Pleasant Hope Church. And then there are other groups, Tana for Ankh, Earth Institute, which is a very Kemetic-centered organization, and then various others. There are the grassroots groups and organizations, and I've got Black Men Unifying Black Men listed here, SRDC here, and then various other general organizations that deal with the people on the ground. There's prison activist groups, everything from Aging People in Prison, I Can't, We Can, Jericho. There are educators and researchers. We got a number of college and university professors. You had the Black Think Tank, and you may still have that, I'm not sure. You have Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle who do a lot of educational work, Institute of the Black World. There are elders groups, and of course, chief for me would be the Maryland Council of Elders. I'm not a member of the Maryland Council of Elders, but we do work with the Maryland Council of Elders. There are potential legal organizations. And there are a couple of people who've come to some of our town halls, and they've got legal knowledge and legal experience. We could involve them with others in a group of legal warriors who could actually fight a lot of those legal battles for us. There's the business cooperatives. That's a Dinkra symbol for wealth. So economists, and that also includes a lot of the Black farmers, because the Black farmers, you know, they grow food. They grow food, so they're in business, and then they grow food which feeds the people and can generate wealth if they can just get the United States government to stop mistreating them. Scientists, I don't know that many Pan-African science, technology, and health practitioners, but I know we've got them out there. So I would say we need to organize them. The state and democracy builders. And again, I put Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle in that organization too. And then finally, of course, the group I'm talking to, members of the Pan-African Media. And again, I have listed here National Black Unity News, Harambe Radio, LIB, and various other, even people who've got websites, Facebook pages that get a lot of clicks. They can be part of Pan-African Media. One of the things about the cell phones, of course, everyone's talking about how we know what's going on with police brutality, and we know just how much of an epidemic it is now because everyone's got a cell phone. So everyone with a cell phone and a camera has the potential to be a contributor to Pan-African Media. When last summer, I think it was, when you had the crisis with water in some of the public housing in Baltimore, imagine what would have happened if we had a coordinated group of people on the ground who could have taken that information, to our media outlets, everyone from our independent media outlets to WEAA and radio shows across the city, gotten that word out much faster than the 4 or 5 days that it took. And then the business organizations, they chime in and they make sure that pallets of water get delivered. And then the legal organizations chime in and they say, okay, now that we've got the problem taken care of, here's how we're going to put pressure on, legal pressure on the people who are supposed to be handling this to make them do it. A serious Pan-African cooperative coalition with the businesses, the grassroots, the media, and the legal organizations, just those four working together in a coordinated manner, could have solved that problem in less than half the time that it took for the major government apparatus to not solve it. So that is, and I'm probably not going to get too much into this either, because there are a number of questions that occurred to me when we were talking about, okay, you want to have this coalition, but how do you put it together in the first place? So there are probably a number of questions that you have to ask and answer. Who are we going to organize with? Are we going to just deal with revolutionaries? Are we going to deal with just plain folks? Are we going to allow anyone affiliated with government to come in? If someone with the Baltimore City Police walks into a meeting, are we going to suddenly shut up? Are we going to ask them to leave? Or are we going to let them come in the hopes that they will behave in a reasonable manner and actually help to build up their community like we would normally expect them to do? Do we even need to discuss with each other what Pan-African means? Do some of us have an understanding that we are African people and some of us not? Do some of us have an issue with continental Africans or not? Do we need to deal with specific questions pertaining to what the status of women is going to be in the movement? Or are we sufficiently well informed that we don't have to go through those kinds of discussions, and we can keep our male egos in check and make sure that we don't prevent the sisters from coming in and taking the leadership that they should be taking? And then there are a number of other issues that we may have to discuss, because they may have something to do with what we do when such and such and such a person decides they want to join our cooperative coalition. So these are just questions we'd have to ask and answer. We'd have to have some core principles. Again, who do we interact with? And how do we make sure that we don't get folks who come in there just to stir up trouble and create havoc? Because that's happened, because this happened in a couple of organizations I was in. And then there are even some ideas as far as how the coalition would respond to different scenarios. And I did put that at the end so that I don't have to go through it right now. And then what kind of a code of conduct would we have? Are we going to have something that's going to say, okay, here's how we're going to act toward each other. Here's how we're going to talk to each other. And because oftentimes, you know, even in meetings that I've been in these days, I've seen people just go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth to the point where two people seem to dominate the entire thing with an argument. And then everyone else is sitting there saying, okay, when are we going to get down to business? These are just some examples of where some of our principles come from. I got Ma'at front and center. But then there are the words and deeds of a number of other people. I've got Asada Shakur right next to that. Next to her is a gentleman in New Orleans named Leon Waters. And he's been doing a lot of organizing on the ground in the New Orleans area. And I need to get back in touch with him. Now we've got the different slave revolts like Nat Turner and Denmark Feezy and Charles Desland in 1811 in New Orleans, which Baba Leon deals with. We've got manifestos from AAPRP and from the Black Panther Party. We've got Black Lives Matters advocacy. We've got celebrities from Muhammad Ali to Colin Kaepernick. We've got a whole number of sources that we can draw from as far as determining what our guiding principles are going to be. Now, the big thing, though, that I noticed it can even happen with this particular arrangement, because the idea here is just to give a graphic representation that will encourage us to work more cooperatively. It doesn't guarantee that we will, because if you've got somebody who just wants to stir up trouble or wants to create discord, they're going to do it no matter what your structure happens to be. But part of the reason why I decided to go with this particular graphic anyway is because, again, of what that whole idea of the wheel means. Again, the beauty of a wheel is that as long as those spokes are strong and the rim is strong and they're connected to the center, it will roll us forward. It will get us where we need to go. But if you break a spoke, then the wheel will either bend or break down in a certain area. As a result, it's not going to roll quite so well. You'll have all these bumps in the road and it'll slow you down. What if you break more than one spoke? Well, usually that'll break even more spokes. Next thing you know, now your wheels collapse. You're crashed on the side of the road. You're going nowhere. And other people whose wheels are still intact will go past you. Now, frankly, that seems to be what we do all the time. We do that all the time. A lot of this is actually a graphic representation of something that looks kind of similar. They call it the circle of trust, I think. And if you break all that down, if you break down that circle of trust, you break down that whole structure where everyone's mission is important and every member of the coalition is important and every member of the coalition is focused on reaching the center, but on making sure that everyone else reaches the center too. You got a strong wheel then. But when you lose that, then you start seeing fractures. The black bourgeoisie and the black revolutionary start fighting. And as a result, you wind up with things like this is something that was called the Lawn Jockey Awards, where you started having people basically taking pot shots at each other because they were calling each other Uncle Toms, which is actually a misnomer. If you read Harriet Beecher Stowe's book, Uncle Tom actually was not the one who was deserving of censure. It was Sambo. Sambo was the one who turned on the people. Uncle Tom was the one who actually made sure that the people were treated well. He was no revolutionary, but he was no Sambo. But at any rate, we call each other Uncle Toms, which is another indication of just how much the disinformation has gotten to the entire community. The elders and the youth don't talk to each other well. It permeates our families, where couples start fighting and arguing. Lower right corner, the religions start fighting against each other. Christians and Jews and Muslims fight against each other. African religion predated all of them. And yet here these three are fighting over who should take supremacy over everything. They're all praying to the same God, and yet they say, my God's better than yours. That doesn't make any sense. You've got fractures that develop over the whole LGBTQ question, one of the questions that at some point or another we have to answer. A number of us in the Pan-African community go along with a lot of African countries that say homosexuality is wrong and it must be eliminated. Others say, look, you know, we're talking about human rights here. You had, back in the 60s, fractures between groups like SCLC, NAACP, and the Black Panther Party. They were talking about John Lewis recently. He was in SNCC, and he ultimately rolled up out of SNCC because there were creative issues, primarily between what he wanted SNCC to do and what Kwame Ture wanted SNCC to do. There can be creative differences between you, but you don't have to fight. There are people who argue over whether we can trust the NAACP or whether we can trust the United Nations or whether we can trust the African Union. And they get the knockdown dragouts over. All the time, they seem to completely forget what COINTELPRO did back in the 1960s. COINTELPRO created a lot of these divisions. They turned activists against each other. The most damaging thing COINTELPRO did wasn't really, in my opinion, wasn't the fact that they launched that December 4th, 1969 raid and killed Fred Hampton. Although that was some dog stuff they did, some down and dirty stuff they did. The real destructive thing they did was to sow discord within the Black Panther Party and put Agence Provocateur inside the Black Panther Party, whose mission it was to break it apart from the inside. But it seems that when we get in all our little internal arguments, we forget that was what our oppressors wanted us to do in the first place. So why are we going to turn around and do it again on our own? We've heard of the Willie Lynch letter. Even if it was fictitious, the principle is still there. He said, put it in place and get it instituted, and they'll continue to do it themselves for the next 300 years. Well, why are we still doing that? Why is it if we know about that letter and we know what its intent was, we're still doing that? We're not bonding together as a people the way we should. We're not listening to Bob Marley when he said Africa unite. In the meantime, the Women's March, right after Trump was elected, had 500,000 women in D.C. And then you had when he was doing the wall and putting children in cages, you had the undocumented immigrant community and the documented immigrant community and their allies coming together and rising up. Where were we? We were sitting on the side of the road with the wheel to our cart broken down because we couldn't keep our coalitions together. And then we were wondering why the Latino community passed us, the Asian community passed us, the LGBTQ community passed us, the white women passed us, and now the angry white men are passing us. Apparently, they didn't break their wheels down as much as we did. Brother King Teasdell, who founded the Souls of Life Society, had this poster that he had made in his house. And so I said, let me take a picture of it. And it seems to be something we forget. We don't respect each other. We don't respect each other's organizations the way we should. If we truly respect each other and each other's organizations, we would, I would think, find a way to make it so that our missions can work cooperatively instead of competitively. Then maybe we can finally break out that red, black, and green and have it mean something. Because frankly, while we're not working together, our enemy is. Global war, resource extraction, pollution, agribusiness, big pharma, mass media, gun manufacturers, prison industrial complex, lying politicians, white supremacists, extremists of all kinds, and big money. All of them are already working together. Because we're being assaulted on all fronts by all of these things. So they got their own little cooperative coalition going. Theirs isn't a cooperative coalition of life, though. Theirs is a cooperative coalition of death and destruction. And that is one of the big reasons why we continue to be in the state that we are in today. Our enemies are working together. Bob Marley had said something, and strangely enough, I didn't know this came from him until I just happened to watch a part of Will Smith's movie, I Am Legend, where he talks about Bob Marley after he had been shot. And several days after he was shot, he showed up at a concert to perform anyway. And someone was marveling at, you know, what, you just got shot a few days ago. Why are you out here performing now? And he said, the people who are working to make the world worse aren't taking a day off. I can't either. And these jokers are not taking a day off. they actually got the system working for us. They got some of us doing their work for them, as a matter of fact. When they do take the day off, it's usually because they got one of us working for them. And so if we want to be able to counteract what it is that they're doing, we have to be able to counteract their cooperative coalition of death with a cooperative coalition of uplift, life, and Pan-African unity and organization.
Okay. Brother Cliff.
Yes.
I know we a little past the time.
Yeah, anyway. I'm gonna let it go at that point.
Yeah, because I just want to know, before we shut this thing down, anybody, unmute yourselves. If you have any questions or concerns or comment about what Brother Cliff has presented this evening, now is the time to do so. All you have to do is unmute yourself.
All right, well, I'll go.
Hey,
I joined late, and my apologies for joining late, because what I saw, it just fascinates me, and it gives me great pride, and it gives me inspiration and encouragement. So, Cliff, thank you for that, because times are tough, and, you know, we are bombarded with all the negativity and the twists and turns that people use to switch our narrative around from something positive to everything negative, from something good to anything bad. And this has just really been a shot in the arm for some encouragement, some motivation, and some inspiration. And I thank you for that. You know, we do have a lot of organizations that are trying to do something right, but they are not going about it the right way. And this is an example of your wheel. Your wheel is an example of how we can come together, how we can be focused on our own little slice of the pie without interfering with or making a mockery of or creating some kind of stumbling block for anybody else that's trying to do something good and positive that doesn't see things the same way we see things. It's still a mechanism that allows that to occur in a unified fashion, even if we are not completely unified in our efforts. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, because, you know, we got to start somewhere. This is as good a place to start as any, because we have to get started. Just like you said, we don't have time to worry about who's holding whose hand. Just get on the wheel and let's go to work. So thank you.
All right, can I make a comment too?
Yes, you can, sir.
Yeah. Peace to everybody. And I really enjoyed the long introduction to the Pan-African concept. I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah.
And
longer than I intended.
You're definitely a scientist. I mean, you know, you remind me of the olives. You know, there's a sir in the Quran that said, Watini wa Zaytun. And talks about the fig and the olive. And the fig, you know, symbolically represents many ideas, or the common man, which you talked a lot about, the common person who most of the time people neglect them. And the olive, you know, has one stone in it. If you try to chew in it too fast, it'll break your mouth, break your teeth, you know. And that's what the educated people do. They get one idea and they stay on it. And, you know, they stay on it and they become scientists. And I see that in you. I see you as a scientist of, you know, our race. You have so many strong perspectives. It was very interesting. I just wanted to go because I had something I had to do, but I couldn't leave because I wanted to see where you went with it. And you, I mean, you know, it's like Moses. He went up on the mountain. When he came back and he presented his ideas to the, you know, the Israelites or whatever they're called, the Egyptians, when he gave them all of that information, most of them rejected him because it was too much. But after they rejected him, he, you know, God said, okay, we can't use them anyway. Let them go in the wilderness for 40 years. But meanwhile, Moses, you take a few people that do accept your idea, and y'all go to heaven. And that's what happened. And that's how you have to look at it. And most of the religions say most of the people are ungrateful. Most of them are not satisfied with the word or the knowledge which you presented to us. You know, and most people can't, you know, they hear it, but they don't come back and keep struggling to go forward with it. And, you know, you have a lot of information. I mean, I know you studied hard, and I really appreciate that. I see the excellence in you, and I want to see my people with that same excellence. But we know most of them ain't going to take it because they never have. If you read the scriptures, you find, you know, the Thamud and, you know, all the different people rejected the good information, the knowledge about self and the knowledge about creation and all of that. They wouldn't accept it. And that's why they went nowhere. Most of them went to hell. Our people in the same thing. If they don't accept it, they're going to hell. And a lot of them in hell right now, you know, because of the same reason they're rejecting the information. And I'm telling you, I haven't rejected anything you said. I mean, I'm going to look at it from a different perspective because, you know, I'm Muslim. I mean, you probably didn't know that, but I know you anyway. We know each other. We've been seeing each other over the years. I appreciate you, and I just wanted to say that, you know. And, you know, you deserve, and you're a common guy, and that's the other thing I like about you. You know, you look common. So you must be, because you know you. What they say, if you walk like a duck, you're a duck. So thank you, and I hopefully you keep up the good work. Maybe we will get together, and some of us do. Some of us got it together, but most of them ain't gonna get it anyway. I don't expect that. If we look at history, we know that ain't gonna happen. You know, even with Noah, if you go all the way back to Noah, you know. You know, his son wouldn't even get on board with him, you know. And what was the other one? Lot, his wife turned into a bowl of salt, you know, because she just wouldn't. She looked back and went back to. And most of our people got this problem. They don't want to leave America because they think if they go on their own, they're going to lose something. And they ain't got nothing, no way. And you look at Oprah Winfrey and Bill Cosby, they was at the top of the world. But their soul is hurting because we don't have ourselves, you know, that human self that God put in every one of us. We don't have that, and we don't grow that. We trying to grow economically, but we got to grow humanly first. You know, we got to be like the first man, Adam. He made a mistake. God forgave him. We're going to make mistakes too, you know, but we got to get back to our own self. We got to start listening to what grandmama told us, you know, and what our ancestors told us. And they were much more struggling than we had because if they made a mistake, they would take them out and hang them. You know, take them out.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Get the Emmett Till and a lot of our people that we know in our lifetime. You know, so let me go because I always get into it, you know, religiously.
Okay, brother, but you know what the old saying is, a prophet never welcome in his own home sometimes, you know. But you know, Brother Cliff, when you first presented this well to me, it made sense to me. And it's something that for those who are sincere or serious about making changes, and we know we can't do this by ourselves. You know, it takes cooperation, you know. And for those, like I said, I have no problem working with people, different organizations, because, like I said, there's many roads to get to the same destination. And just like nation building, you got to have a building a house. You got to have the carpenter, the bricklayer, the plumber. You got to have all of these sources to come together to complete the package. And so, therefore, we need all of these organizations. They all have their own purposes, and you lined them up greatly. And so and to make this wheel turn. And so, again, I commend you because, like I said, I know you put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And not only that, I've been in many rooms where you presented this at. And like Brother Bilal just said, some people were very impressed with that. Other people sitting there and talk. You know, I watch, you know, observe, you know, and like I say, you know, because like I say, when God bless you with an idea, it may not even come in your time. But because it's there now, it's created now, it's manifested already. And so now it's there, and then just who knows, one of our younger generations may peep in one day or pick up on it. And they take it and run with it. Same thing with the National Black Unity News. You know, we cooperation. Like, that's why all you see these various people on it, because we have come together and on the same purpose. They come from different walks of life, but we come for the purpose of the National Black Unity News to uplift our people. Same reasons.
Yeah.
And again, brother, I, you know, I'm going to give anybody else, we got a few more minutes left, so anybody else want to chime in, ask a question, make a comment, this is the time to do so.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
Well, one quick analogy I'll throw in. There are all kinds of sporting analogies for this too. You take a look at especially the game of football and the game of basketball. Of course, now football is kind of a sore subject for a lot of us in Baltimore right about now. But the fact of the matter is, the football team that wins is the one that doesn't necessarily have the biggest star in the league, but their quarterback, their receivers who are fast, their offensive line that blocks, their tight ends who can make the tough catches over the middle, their running backs who can carry the ball into the hole, they're all working together. They have different skill sets. They have different abilities, but they play well together. The teams that look like they should win, but they lose, they're losing because the coach isn't making those players work together well. Sometimes those same players who failed on one team go to another team and become world beaters. You take a look at the NBA. LeBron James for a long time, and Michael Jordan too. Greatest player in the league, both of them in their prime. Scoring 60 points a game, 70 points a game, but their team is still losing. It wasn't until they had a team around them, different people who did different things well, but did it toward the same goal and did it cooperatively. That's when they won. If anyone in this call plays chess, then, and if you play chess well, then you will know that to try to win a game of chess with only one piece, no matter which piece it is, it can be the most powerful piece on the board, the queen. You try to win a game of chess with just your queen, you're going to get beat. You're going to get beat badly. At least if you play me, you will, because a decent player or a good player knows how to make their pieces work together. And they can even make their smaller, their minor pieces work together to harass your queen, chase her around the board, trap her somewhere, maybe win her outright, and then go after your king. Why? Because you thought bringing out the most powerful piece on the board first was going to win for you. Your opponent knew better. Your opponent was strategic, and your opponent knew how to make the pieces cooperate. Similar to that is sort of even the stay in your lane philosophy. And I understand a little bit of that because they say that if I'm an economist, I shouldn't be telling an artist how to play their drum. Yeah. Or if I'm an artist, I shouldn't be telling the spiritual God how to handle their business. And I understand that part. But the lanes can't stay separated. At some point, for us to move together as a people, those lanes have to converge. And if those lanes don't converge, individuals will get somewhere, but as a people, we won't.
All right. And so, in closing, Brother Cliff, can you, if you don't mind, you give out your website and your telephone number, or if somebody wants to ask you questions later on, or just peruse your website.
Okay. Well, I'll give you three things. First of all, the website is KuumbaReport.com. So, KUU. MBA, Six Principles of Kwanzaa, report.com. It's based on the newsletter I did from 1997 to 2011. And like I said, I got PDF copies of some, about half of those newsletters buried on my site over the years. They've probably gotten buried by a whole bunch of other stuff. So that's the website. Email is probably the easiest way to reach me with complicated questions. And that email is Cliff, C-L-I-F-F, at KuumbaReport.com.
Okay.
And if somebody wants to text or call, cell phone is 443-865-2723.
Okay.
And if the call comes in and I don't recognize it, or if I'm in the middle of doing something, I might not be able to pick it up right away. But if I don't pick it up right away, then just leave a message, and then I'll be sure to get back, at least if you leave a message and you're not a telemarketer, because I get a lot of calls from telemarketers. So those are the text on that line works too.
Okay. All right. So ladies and gentlemen, we're going to shut this thing down. And Brother Cliff, I want to thank you again, sir, for taking your precious time to be with us this evening, sharing that powerful information with us, because.
And I thank you for, number one, putting together the National Black Unity News.
Yeah,
and bringing all of these people together, and then not only turning it into it, it's a growing juggernaut now. Not only turning it into what you have done and what it's becoming, but also adding in things like the Zoom calls. I'm figuring sooner or later you're going to be on TV.
Oh well, yeah. Like I said, we don't know what the end result is going to be, but one thing we're going to do, like the will, we're going to keep it moving. You know, we ain't going to stop for nobody. We're going to do us. We're not waiting for other people to do what we can do for ourselves. And so, you know, and that's the beauty about it. That's why I recognize and understand what you're doing, because it's working for us.
Mm.
And our purpose, like I said, we come from many walks of life, but yet our goal is to uplift us as a people.
Mm-hmm.
And we will continue to do that. And Brother Cliff is in the National Black Unity News. You can find him in there as well. And so again, Brother, I appreciate you, man. And you keep doing what you're doing, sir, because see, it's people like you that keeps me running, keeps me moving. Because I see, when I look around, I see so many powerful people like the Fran Allens and the Tavi Jahees and the High Keys and the Bilals, everybody else out there doing things, not just doing, but have done things.
Mm-hmm.
And it continues still to be active. And so we appreciate you. And again, thank you for the remembrance of our sister, Maisha Washington, because she I watched the thing today, and it just goes to show you. Tomorrow's not promised to us. And I want y'all to keep my family while we're doing this, because you have not, because you asked not. Keep my family in prayer, because we've been hit with that bug. My daughter, my son-in-law, even my wife has it now.
I'm in
the fire pit, so y'all keep me in prayer, because, but like I say, God is in control, so I have no doubt, you know, what will be. But the important thing is, no matter what obstacle, no matter what we up against, we move forward. You know, because like I said, if you live, you've been there, you've done that. So let's keep it moving, y'all. And I thank each and every one of you. And tomorrow evening, we will be here online again with our host, Fran Allen. And we're going to have some powerful discussions about tomorrow. Me and Fran are going to get together tomorrow. But I have an idea for some of the elders. Because like just like this call this evening, we need our elders' wisdom, because a lot of people, like Brother Cliff just mentioned, going to be jumping off of bridges tomorrow.
They're pulling their hair out already.
I mean, and talking about leaving the country and starting wars, rumors of wars and stuff, you know. But you know, that's them. But me and my house, man, we got work to do. Let them do them, we're going to do us. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate you. Have much love and respect for each and every one of you.
And with that being said, good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank
good
you
night.
Again.
Enjoyed it.
Good night.
Yeah. I'll be heard about Richard. Saying, it's always.
Yeah.
And then about, we were just getting to Rapport. Thinking about, I was thinking about visually, talking about it, being in the house, talking down. It's not out, spikes. And it's, you know. And,